Part 3. Glory. All that we have is that shout into the wind, how we live, how we go, and how we stand before we fall. Carnus al Bellona. Chapter 35. The Light. For 7 days after the death of Ragnar, I travel across the ice with Sefi, speaking to the male tribes of the Broken Spine, to the blooded braves of the North Coast, to women who wear the horns of rams and stand watch over the Witch Pass. Flying in grav boots beside the Valkyrie, we come bringing the news of the fall of Asgard. It is dramatic. Sefi and a score of her Valkyrie have begun training with Holiday and me to learn to use the grav boots and pulse weapons. They're clumsy at first. One flew into the side of a mountain at Mach 2. But when 30 land with their headdresses kicking in the wind, the left of their faces painted with the blue handprint of Sefi the Quiet, and the right with the sling blade of the Reaper, folks tend to listen. We take the lion's share of obsidian leaders to the conquered mountain and let them walk the halls where their gods ate and slept, and show them the cold, preserved corpses of the slain golds. In seeing their gods slain, most, even those who knew tacitly of their true condition as slaves, accepted our olive branch. Those who did not, who denounced us, were overcome by their own people. Two war chiefs hurled themselves from the mountain in shame. Another opened her veins with a dagger and bleeds out on the floor of the greenhouses. And one, a particularly psychotic little woman, watched with great malevolence as we took her to the mountain's data hub, where three greens informed her of a planned coup against her rule, showing her video of the conspiracy. We loaned her a razor, a flight back home, and 2 days later she added 20,000 warriors to my cause. Sometimes I encounter Ragnar's legend. It has spread among the tribes. They call him the Speaker, the one who came with truth, who brought the prophets and sacrificed his life for his people. But with my friend's legend grows my own. My sling blade symbol burns across the mountainsides to greet me and the Valkyrie when we fly to meet with new tribes. They call me the Morning Star. That star by which griffin riders and travellers navigate the wastes in the dark months of winter. The last star that disappears when daylight returns in the spring. It is my legend that begins to bind them, not their sense of kinship with one another. These clans have warred for generations, but I have no sordid history here. Unlike Sefi or the other great obsidian warlords, I am their untouched field of snow, their blank slate on which they can project whatever disparate dreams they have. As Mustang says, I am something new, and in this old world, steeped in legends, ancestors, and what came before, something new is something very special. Yet despite our progress with gathering the clans, the difficulty we face is massive. Not only must we keep the fractious obsidians from killing one another in honor duels, but many of the clans have accepted my invitation for relocation. Hundreds of thousands of them must be brought from their homes in the Antarctic to the tunnels of the Reds, so they are beyond the reach of gold bombardment, which will come when the golds discover what has transpired here. All this while keeping the jackal dumb and blind to our manoeuvres. From Asgard, Mustang has led the counterintelligence efforts, with the help of Quicksilver's hackers, to mask our presence and project reports consistent with those filed in previous weeks to the Board of Quality Control HQ in Aegea. With no way to move them without someone noticing, Mustang, a gold aristocrat, has conceived the most audacious plan in the history of the Sons of Ares. one massive troop movement, utilizing thousands of shuttles and freighters from Quicksilver's mercantile fleet and the Sons of Ares Navy to move the population of the Pole in 12 hours. 1,000 ships skimming over the southern sea, burning helium, to set down on the ice before obsidian cities and lower their ramps to the hundreds and thousands of giants swaddled in fur and iron who will fill their hulls with the old, the sick, the warriors, the children, and the fetid stink of animals. Then, under the cover of the Sons of Ares ships, the population will be dispersed underground, and many of the warriors to our military ships in orbit. I do not think I know another person in the world who can organize it as fast as she does. On the 8th day after the fall of Asgard, I depart with Sephi, Mustang, Holiday, and Cassius to join Sevro in overseeing the final preparations for the migration. The Valkyrie bring Ragnar with us on the flight, wrapping his frozen body in rough cloth and clutching him close in terror as our ship cruises just beneath the speed of sound, 5 meters from the surface of the ocean. They watch in awe as we enter the tunnels of Mars through one of the many sun's subterranean access points. This one, an old mining colony in a southern mountain range. Sun's lookouts in heavy winter jackets and balaclavas salute with their fists in the air as we pass into the tunnel. Half a day of subterranean flying later, we arrive at Tinos. It is a hub of ship activity, hundreds cluttering the stalactite docks, taxiing through the air, and it seems the whole city watches our shuttle as it passes through the traffic to land in its stalactite hangar, knowing it bears not just me and our new obsidian allies, but the broken shield of Tinos. Their weeping faces blur past. Already rumors swirl through the refugees. The obsidians are coming. Not just to fight, but to live in Tinos, to eat their food, to share their already crowded streets. Dancer says the place is a powder keg about to erupt. I can't say I disagree. The disposition of the Sons of Ares is dour. They gather in silence as my ship's landing ramp unfurls. I go first down the ramp. Sevro waits beside Dancer and Mickey. He slams me into a hug. The beginnings of a goatee mark his stoic face. He holds his shoulders as square as he can, as if those bony things alone could hold up the hopes of the thousands of Sons of Ares who filled the docking bay to see the shield of Tinos brought back to his adopted home. "Where is he?" Sevro asks thickly. I look back into my shuttle as Sephi and her Valkyrie carry Ragnar down the ramp. The Howlers are the first to greet them, Clown saying a respectful word to Sephi as Sevro steps past me to stand before the Valkyrie. "Welcome to Tinos," he says to the Valkyrie in Nagal. "I am Sevro Aubarka, blood brother to Ragnar Valaris. These are his other brothers and sisters." He motions to the Howlers, all of whom wear their wolf cloaks. Sevro produces Ragnar's bear cloak. "He wore this to battle. With your permission, I'd like him to wear it now."
"You were brother to Ragnar. You are brother to me," Sephi says.
She clicks her tongue, and her Valkyrie pass stewardship of her brother's body to Sevro. Mustang glances my way. Sephi's generosity strikes me as a promising sign. If she were a covetous creature, she would have kept his body in her lands and given him an obsidian funeral pyre before burying his ashes in the ice. Instead, she told me she knows where his true home lies, with those who fought beside him, who helped him come back to his people. Mustang moves closer beside me as the Howlers drape Ragnar's cloak over his body and carry him through the crowd. The suns part for them. Hands reach to touch Ragnar.
"Look," Mustang says, nodding to the thin black ribbons that the suns have tied into their beards and hair.
Her hand finds my smallest finger. A small squeeze sends me back to the woods where she saved me, making me feel warm, even as we watch Severo leave the hangar with Ragnar's body.
Go.
She nudges me his direction. Dancer and I have a conference scheduled with Quicksilver and Victra. She needs a guard, I tell Dancer. Sons you trust.
I'll be fine,
Mustang says, rolling her eyes. I survived the obsidians. She'll have the pit vipers, Dancer says. Examining Mustang without the kindness I'm used to seeing in his eyes. Ragnar's death has taken the spirit out of him today. He seems older as he waves Nair all over and nods to the shuttle. The Bologna on board? Holiday's got him in the passenger cabin. His neck's still torn up, so he'll need Virini to take a look at him.
Be discreet about it. Give him a private room.
Private? Place is crammed, Darrow. Captains don't even get private rooms.
He's got intel.
You want him shot before he can give it to us? I ask. Is that why you kept him alive? Dancer looks at Mustang skeptically, as if she's already compromising my decisions. Little does he know, she'd have let Cassius die more readily than I ever would. Dancer sighs when I don't relent. He'll be safe. On my word.
Find me later, Mustang says, as I depart.
I find Severo slumped over Ragnar in Mickey's laboratory. It's a thing to hear of a friend's death. It's another to see the shadow of what they've left behind. I hated the sight of my father's old work gloves after he died. Mother was too practical to throw them away, said we couldn't afford to. So I did it myself one day, and she boxed my ears and made me bring them back. The scent of death is growing stronger from Ragnar. The cold preserved him in his native land, but Tinos has been suffering power outages and refrigeration units play second zither to the water purifiers and air reclamation systems in the city beneath. Soon Mickey will embalm him and make preparations for the burial Ragnar asked for. I sit in silence for half an hour, waiting for Severo to speak. I don't want to be here. Don't want to see Ragnar dead. Don't want to linger in the sadness. Yet I stay for Severo. My armpits stink. I'm tired. The scanty tray of food Dio brought me is untouched except the biscuit I chew numbly and think how ridiculous Ragnar looks on the table. He's too big for it, feet hanging off the edge. Despite the smell, Ragnar is peaceful in death. Ribbons red as winter berries nestled in the white of his beard. Two razors rest in his hands, which are folded across his bare chest. The tattoos are darker in death, covering his arms, his chest and neck. The matching skull he gave me and Severo seems so sad, telling its story, even though the man who wears it is dead. Everything is more vivid except the wound. It's innocuous and thin as a snake's smile along his side. The holes Azure made in his stomach seem so small. How could such little things take so large a soul from this world? I wish he were here. The people need him more than ever. Severo's eyes are glassy, and his fingers glide over the tattoos on Ragnar's white face.
He wanted to go to Venus, you know,
he murmurs, voice soft as a child's, softer than I've ever heard it before. I showed him one of the holovids of a catamaran there. Second he put the goggles on, I'd never seen anyone smile like that, like he'd found heaven and realized he didn't have to die to go there. He'd sneak in and borrow my holo gear in the middle of the night till one day I just gave him the damn thing. Things are 400 credits, max. Know what he did to repay me? I don't.
Severo holds up his right hand to show me his skull tattoo. He made me his brother. He gives Ragnar a slow, affectionate punch to the jaw. But the big fat idiot had to run at Azure instead of away from her. The Valkyries still scour the wastes in vain for signs of the Olympic night. Her trail goes deeper into the crevasse before it is covered by the frozen black blood of some creature. I hope something found her and took her to its cave in the ice to finish her slowly. But I doubt it. A woman like that doesn't just fade. Whatever Azure's fate, if she's alive, she'll find a way to contact the Sovereign or the Jackal. It was my fault, I say. My shit plan to take Azure out. She killed Quinn. Helped kill my father, Severo mutters. Killed dozens of us when you were locked up. Wasn't your bad. You'd have lost me too, if I were there. Even Rags couldn't have kept me from having a go at her. Severo rolls his knuckles along the edge of the table, leaving little white creases in the skin. Always trying to protect us. The shield of Tenos, I say. The shield of Tenos. He echoes, voice catching. He loved the name. I know. I think he'd always thought himself a blade before he met us. We let him be what he wanted. A protector. He wipes his eyes and backs away from Ragnar. Anyway, the little princeling is alive.
I nod.
We brought him on the shuttle. Pity. 2 millimeters. He pinches his fingers together, illustrating how narrowly Mustang's arrow missed Cassius's jugular. After Sephi dispatched riders to the tribes, I took her and many of her warriors to Asgard aboard the shuttle to see the fortress there. I brought Cassius along as well, and Asgard's yellows saved his life. Why are you keeping him alive, Darrow? If you think he's going to thank you for your generosity, you've got another thing coming.
I couldn't just let him die.
He killed my father.
I know.
Give me a reason. Maybe I think the world would be a better place with him in it.
I say tentatively.
So many people have used him, lied to him, betrayed him. All that's defined him. It's not fair. I want him to have a chance to decide for himself what kind of person he wants to be. None of us get to be what we want to be,
Severo mutters.
At least not for long. Isn't that why we fight? Isn't that what you just said about Ragnar? He was made a blade, but we gave him a chance to be a shield. Cassius deserves that same chance.
Shithead.
He rolls his eyes. Just because you're right doesn't mean you're right. Anyway, eagles are hated as much as the lions. Someone here is still going to try to pop him. And your girl, too.
She's got the pit vipers with her.
And she's not my girl. Whatever you say. He collapses into one of Mickey's stolen leather chairs and rubs a hand along his mohawk's ridge. Wish she'd taken the telemanuses with her. If she had, you'd have slagged Azure hard. He closed his eyes and leans his head back. Oh, hey! He remembers suddenly. I got you some ships.
I saw that. Thank you, I say.
Finally! He snorts a laugh. A sign we're making a difference. 20 torch ships, 10 frigates, 4 destroyers, a dreadnought. You should have seen it, Reap. Martian Navy pumped Phobos full of legionnaires, emptied their ships, and we just stole their assault shuttles, flew them back with the right codes, and landed them in their hangars. My squad didn't even fire a shot. Quicksilver's boys even hacked the PA systems in the Navy ships. They all heard your speech.
It was mutiny almost before we got on board. Reds, oranges, blues, even greys. It won't work again. The PA system bit. Golds will learn to cut themselves off the network so we can't hack in. But it got him hard this week. When we reunite with the Pax and Orion's other ships, we'll have a real force to slag the Pixies. It's moments like this that I know I'm not alone. Damn the world, so long as I have my mangy little guardian angel. If only I was so good at guarding him as he is at guarding me. Once again, he's done all I could ask, and more. As I marshaled the obsidians, he ripped a gaping hole in the Jackal's defense fleet, crippled a fourth of them, forced the rest to retreat toward the outer moon of Deimos to regroup with the Jackal's reserves and await additional reinforcements from Ceres and the Can. For a brief hour, he held naval supremacy over all of Mars's southern hemisphere. The Goblin King. Then he was forced to retreat to hunker close into Phobos, where his men eliminated the trapped loyalist marines by using Rolo's squads to cut off their air and vent them into space. I'm under no delusion. The Jackal won't let us have the moon. He might not care about its people, but he can't destroy the station's helium refineries. So another assault will come soon. It won't affect my war effort, but the Jackal will get tied down fighting the populace that we've woken. It'll drain his resources without trapping me. Worst possible situation for him. What are you thinking? I ask Severo. His eyes are lost in the ceiling. I'm wondering how long till it's us on the slab. And wondering why it's got to be us on the line. You see vids and hear stories and you think of the regular people. The ones who got a chance at life on Ganymede or Earth or Luna. Can't help but be jealous. You don't think you've gotten a chance to live? I ask. Not proper, he says. What's proper? I ask. He crosses his arms like he's a kid in a fort, looking down at the real world and wondering why it can't be as magical as he is. I don't know. Something far away from being a peerless scard. Maybe a pixie, or even a happy mid-colour. I just want something to look at and say, that's safe. That's mine. And no one is going to try and take it. A house. Kids. Kids? I ask. I don't know. I never thought of it till Pops died. Till they took you. Till Victra, you mean? I say with a wink. Nice goatee, by the way. Shut up, he says. Have you two... He cuts me off, changing the subject. But it'd be nice to just be Severo. To have Pops. To have known my mother. He laughs at himself, harder than he should. Sometimes I think about going back to the beginning and wondering what would have happened if Pops had known the board was coming, if he'd escaped with my mother, with me. I nod. I always think about how life would have been like if Io never died. The children I would have had, what I would have named them. I smiled distantly. I would have grown old, watched Io grow old, and I would have loved her more with each new scar, with each new year, even as she learned to despise our small life. I would have said farewell to my mother, maybe my brother, sister, and if I was lucky, one day, when Io's hair turned grey, before it began to fall out and she began to cough, I would hear the shift of rocks over my head on the drill. And that would be it. She would have sent me to the incinerators and sprinkled my ashes. Then our children would have done the same. And the clans would say we were happy and good and raised bloody damn fine children. And when those children died, our memory would fade. and when their children died, it would be swept away, like the dust we become, down and away to the long tunnels. It would have been a small life, I say with a shrug, but I would have liked it. And every day I ask myself, if I was given the chance to go back, to be blind, to have all that back, would I? And what's the answer? All this time I thought this was for Io. I drove straight on like an arrow because I had that one perfect idea in my head. She wanted this. I loved her, so I'll make her dream real. But that's bullshit. I was living half a bloody damn life, making an idol out of a woman, making her a martyr, something instead of someone, pretending she was perfect. I run my hand through my greasy hair. She wouldn't have wanted that. And when I looked out at the hollows, I just knew. I mean, I guess I realized, as I was talking, that justice isn't about fixing the past. It's about fixing the future. We're not fighting for the dead. We're fighting for the living. And for those who aren't yet born. For a chance to have children. That's what has to come after this. Otherwise, what's the point? Severo sits silently, thinking over what I've said. You and I keep looking for light in the darkness, expecting it to appear. But it already has. I touch his shoulder. We're it, boyo. Broken and cracked and stupid as we are, we're the light, and we're spreading.